We're going to look at this chapter again. We kind of broke in the middle of it. We did so. One thing is the passage has a number of proverbs that aren't necessarily tied together. The contrast, as the proverbs do, the wise and the foolish, for us in a number of ways. But some of the chapters, as I saw last week, mentioned last week, some of the chapters seem to dwell on a whole theme, and you break it, look at it together. But then there are a section of these proverbs, or a number of them, right here in the heart of the book, that aren't like that. They're meant to be taken really one at a time, and meditated upon, thought upon. Just to give some time with, sit there and ponder them. A proverb is meant to be pondered. That's one of the difficulties in teaching proverbs, because if you ponder every proverb, we'll be here till the Lord comes back with the proverbs, because there's 31 chapters of them. They're well worth pondering, but the problem is the Bible contains 66 books, and we don't want to spend all of our time in just one book. And so we have tried to move through them, the Proverbs. In looking at this chapter, there are a number of sub-themes within the chapter that are emphasized. One of which is the tongue. That's emphasized probably as much as any theme in this book. And the tongue is emphasized under the thought of the tongue of the wise, the tongue of the foolish, or the tongue of the righteous and the tongue of the wicked. In fact, the Proverbs really make no difference there. In the Proverbs, the wise are the righteous and the wicked are the foolish. And the terms are used interchangeably. And that's how the Lord Himself looks at it. The Lord Himself, when He taught the Sermon on the Mount, for instance, He said the wise man is the man who builds his house upon a rock. But then He described that wise man as the one who takes my sayings and hears them and does them. And then He said the foolish man is the man who builds his house upon the sand. And then He described the foolish man as the man who has this word but does nothing with it. And so, wisdom and righteousness, foolishness and wickedness. And in fact, that's how the Bible presents it. As people are wicked, in a sense, because they have a lack of understanding. They do not view things rightly. And people are righteous based upon their understanding. When you come to the New Testament, the emphasis upon the sober mind. And we often think of sober mind as a mind where there's temperance, where a person's in total control. He's lack of temperance, the person who drinks, he doesn't have control. Well, when we think of sober in that context, drunkenness and literal soberness. The soberness in the New Testament has to do with the person whose mind is engaged. He's a person who's thinking. He's a person who's reasoning. And then because that is true, it affects his whole life. And so here in this text, the righteous is the wise and the wicked is the fool. And the tongue of the wise is compared to the tongue of the righteous. And the tongue of the fool is the tongue of the wicked. So that's one great theme as we've looked at here. He talks, for instance, verse 11, the mouth of the righteous. Or verse 31, the mouth of the righteous. And then he comes at it from another direction in verse 18. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. Whoever spreads slander is a fool. And here is a proverb that is emphasizing the the lips of the fool. In other words, the one that spreads slander. He's a fool. And often, it's interesting, verse 18, I didn't say much about it as we went through it, but people who slander try to come off sometimes as, I'm going to tell you something, I'm not talking about somebody, but I'm going to tell you something. When the truth is, they are hiding lying lips, or their lips are hiding hatred that's in their heart. It's the hatred in their heart that causes them to slander somebody, but they try to do it in such a way as to not come across that way. But they actually are doing that. Well, so we have the tongue of the wise, the tongue of the fool, the tongue of the righteous. And then the other theme in this chapter is laziness. That not only is the speech of the wise emphasized and the speech of the foolish, but the question of laziness. And this is addressed throughout the Proverbs, and the word that's often used in our Bible is the word sluggard, which means lazy. A lazy person is a sluggard. I ever hear anybody use the word sluggard. We use the word slothful. And I remember being told that lazy was too good a word, that you should call somebody that's lazy a slothful sluggard. And really emphasize that. That it's something that's low, it's detestable. I mean, it's down there in the ditch with all the other unrighteous things. And so the writer of Proverbs emphasizes that theme here in this book. We saw it in this chapter, in verse 4 and 5. He talks about the one who deals with a slack hand and the one who's diligent. And how diligence leads to riches. Talks about the man who sleeps during harvest. And then in verse 26, he speaks of his vinegar to the teeth and his smoke to the eyes. So is a lazy man to those who send him. There's a proverb that says something like this, that confidence in an unfaithful man is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. Do you remember that one? And if you ever had a broken tooth, you can appreciate the pain of that, a toothache. Or a broken foot, when it's right in the joint, and you walk on it, and the pain. Well, when you put confidence in an unfaithful person, it uses that kind of illustration. You're going to suffer for it. Wherever you put confidence in an unfaithful person, you're going to suffer for it. And that's the idea here. A lazy man, yeah, I don't know much about vinegar to the teeth. They say that it makes a sensation. You could go home and find out what it's like. I don't know about it. I don't like the vinegar too much. Some of the people are taking this night stuff they call the jogging in the jug. Have y'all ever heard it? You're on it? Well, maybe it's on it. I ain't sure that stuff doesn't have alcohol in it. But I was working at my dad's, and I've been giving my stepmother some hard way about it. In fact, last night we were having some eggnog there at the house, and so I called up to her house to see if I could get some of that jogging in the jug to put in the egg. So I was working on the floor up there, and I was thirsty, and I found this stuff, and I said, well, that looks like grape juice or something. That would be good. Got me a whole cup of it. It was jogging in the jug. Vinegar. Oh. And I've been accusing her ever since of the drinking up on the hill. Maybe even bootlegging out the back window. I'm not sure. But the jogging in the jug. But the vinegar. But vinegar by itself, I don't know what it does, but apparently it does something to the teeth. There's an irritant. There's a sensation. But I do know a lot about smoke in the eyes. You try to grill out and you get the smoke in the eyes. It's much like an onion. You could have put an onion right there. Onion, you cut an onion, and I'm persuaded that most of these television preachers, they have an onion in their handkerchief. And when they want to cry, they bring it out, because they produce some real tears. But what he's talking about here is the smoke to the eyes and the irritants. It's painful. And you put a lazy man, you send a lazy man, and you're going to get irritated before it's done. You're going to be upset before it's done. You're just better off not to mess with a lazy person. And very seldom will you change a lazy person. I say this, if you get regenerated, if a man gets born again, that's one of the things that God will lead him to change. I'm not saying it changes immediately, but a man's not going to follow the Lord very long and continue in that path. Not only will he get up and go to work, but his quality of work will change. The Bible will lead him to do whatever he does with all of his might. The Bible will lead him to do whatever he does as unto the Lord. The Bible will lead him to do everything he does unto the glory of Jesus Christ. And that change, that doesn't make that he'll be the best at what he does. Suppose he's a floor-covering man. And he's been laying back and letting the others carry the load. And by the way, that's what a lazy man does. A lazy man is a wicked man because he'll let other people carry the load. He's willing to let another man do twice as much work while he does none. He's willing to let others support his family while he lays up. That's wicked. Laziness should be not tolerated. Boy, in a family situation, you get somebody you've got to carry the load for. I got too many people, I can't carry the load for people. And so everybody's got to do their job. I tell my wife, I don't do dishes. And if you do them, you're crazy. I don't say, I'm not that mean, but that's why I believe it. She's got all those kids, she don't do dishes. Why should she ever do dishes? And she doesn't do them a favor. Raise them up to let somebody else do for them. Everybody has their own job, you know. What do you do? At least I can. I never asked my wife to cut the grass. I never would. I never asked her to change the oil. Not that I change it anymore. Those type things you do. I do the bush hogging of the fields and on and on. Everybody has, but the laziness. A lazy person, somebody else has to carry his load. I get tired of watching these NFL players. Don't you get frustrated watching them if you watch them? You have a little running back to run 25 yards and he's got to go take three plays off. And I hear in John Madden, he's talking, complaining about it, and I like to listen to him talk, but he says, that shouldn't be tolerated, that a player would take himself out of the game. And I agree with him. Here you're making millions of dollars and you ought to get in good enough shape, you can at least stay in there for a whole set of downs. Every time I turn around, I don't have a team now. But two or three teams I like, but it bothers me. The ball gets down to the goal line, and you got a running back can run it in, the best player maybe in the NFL, and he's sitting over there he might as well be over smoking a cigarette. He's taking some kind of break, I don't know what. But I used to play ball with people, and Ricky can identify with this. When you practice, and I thrived, I loved practice as much as I did playing, I think. But you get out there in the field and each person take their time hitting the ball. And the guys out in the field run the ball down. And you played in your spot. There's always a couple sorry guys, usually coaches' sons. They take their licks with the bat and go sit down. Oh, I hate it. I thought that's just sorry lazy. You know what I'm saying? Lazy. Coaching anybody that's lazy, it wears on them. But you work with guys. They can do the same thing over and over again and can't keep it right. You know, putting bolts on in them, nuts. Miss every third one. Whatever. But you put confidence in a lazy. That's one of the themes of this chapter, and it's one of the themes of the book, and it's one of the things that we need to address in America. The Bible says if a man won't work, he shouldn't eat. And a man's stomach will make him get up and go to work. Do you believe that? You get hungry enough, I've learned we're busy around our house with homeschool, and I get hungry enough, I get up and make my own breakfast if I have to. Not that I don't have a good wife. I don't go off saying he said you wouldn't make great. You people get me in trouble sometimes with what you go off saying. And there's no reason to do that. But I'm telling you this. If I sit there all morning hungry, that's just my fault. I can find a way to do something. And but anyway, lazy man. That's one of the themes. But really, this chapter, as I told you before, I think if you see any one thing driven, the point driven in or made, it is that the final outcome, the long look, the long term effect of righteousness and wickedness. This comes through again and again. He talks, for instance, in verse 7, we've already looked at it, but the memory of the righteous is blessed. The name of the wicked will rot. I think it's the writer of Ecclesiastes said, I saw the wicked dead, buried, and forgotten. And the wicked are that way. They're dead, buried, and forgotten. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. I dare say you could prove this if you did a study on it. The greatest philosophers of the 19th century that denied the tenets of the faith, they denied the truth. They wrote their books against it and they died and perished and left their books. I guarantee you, if you go and check the writings of Charles Spurgeon are read 500 to 1. I just almost bet you that you could prove that if you had a way of proving it. Old Charles Spurgeon preached there in London. His sermons today are still being reproduced in new books and broken down and put in for instance, his sermons were in huge volumes. Now they produce a sermon book on his teaching on the prayer, his teaching on soul winning, his teaching on the spirit, and they continue to come out. But you take old Voltaire, you'd be interested to know when the last time anybody did pull his dusty writings down. Or Thomas Paine. When's the last time anybody wasted a good evening sitting by the fireplace with Thomas Paine? I got his book over there in my office. Sitting there. I wonder sometimes I hadn't desecrated the place with it. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to desecrate the place with the infidel's writings. But I'll tell you this. I don't have an evening. I don't have an evening to waste by my fireplace with Thomas Paine. Or Voltaire or anybody else denies the truth. Their names rot, but the memory of the righteous. I'm always blessed. The Lord seems to constantly put somebody else in my path that lived hundreds of years ago, perhaps, and there's still a thrill to my heart, a blessing to me. I had the privilege, I was telling Glenn a while ago, of hearing Bob Jones Sr. preach yesterday. No, it's today. And it wasn't just his radio talks. It was his a sermon to chapel. His own sermon audio. My! I hadn't really heard him preach. I'd heard him talk on the radio. But boy, I told Brother Glenn, that guy's some more gun barrel straight preacher. And his name is blessed. The memory, the long term, but the wicked. Forgotten. And you see this, the long-term effect. Look down, I think we stopped somewhere around verse 21. But he talks about the blessing of the Lord. It makes one rich. It makes rich. Be careful you don't run off with that too far. Understand, if you follow Christ, nation does, that nation will be blessed. Jewish people are known for industry. They're known for business. Because the principles of the Old Testament will lead to prosperity. They were taught to lend, not borrow. They were taught the value of labor and work and doing the foundation of the whole law is to love God and to love your neighbor. And I guarantee you, you do what's best for your neighbor in every area of your life, and you think of others, what you're going to find is you'll prosper. But if you work harder, you'll prosper. If you work longer, you'll prosper. If you do a better job. That's why one thing I like about America. It's free enterprise. It's not communism. We're not a socialist country. Oh, I know we've got socialists up there in Washington because they've trained from these schools. And our higher academia in America is socialist all the way. They want to take from the rich. They're just modern Robin Hoods. They do it through taxing. It would be wrong if they stole it, so they do it through taxing. They take from the rich and they give to the poor. That's the way they do. But what I'm trying to say, see, socialism, communism never works. You know the idea of communism, everybody has it in common. What happens? You lose your motivation. I'm not going to do any better if I work harder. Why should I work harder? And I'm not here to kick against the union tonight, but that's one of the problems unions have created. I believe there's value in what the unions have created, and I believe there's sometimes disvalue. And I think you got to look at the whole. And I'm not here to argue about that, but I'll tell you this. The idea that I'm going to do just as well as this guy, no matter how hard I work, that's at the heart of communism. It doesn't work. But the Bible teaches that man won't work. Oh, he shouldn't eat. And it teaches then to labor hard and to do your best and that you will prosper if you do so. Now, the prosperity gospel is that you give God a dime, he'll give you a dollar. And, you know, the idea that every health, wealth, and riches, that just won't stack up with the Bible. As a general rule, and I'm going to say this as I think there's no question. As a general rule, if you follow the ways of the Bible and you do what's right, then you're going to prosper for it. But that is not the same as the health, wealth, prosperity gospel. The reality is that many righteous people suffer. And many righteous people go through dark times of their life like Job did and like Joseph did, completely in the will of God. Unknown to them at the time why they're going through it, but just the same, they go through it. There's no question Abraham prospered. But on the other side, there's no question he was a pilgrim and a stranger. All of that. So when you see statements like this, or my soul above all things wishes that thou would prosper and be in good health, try to understand those statements and put them in the context, but don't the health and wealth prosperity gospel people have left the gospel a long time ago. They hold a false hope to people. And if you follow those people, the truth doesn't matter to those people. They're not doctrinal people. They're not Bible people. They soundbite the Bible. You know what that is? You pick a verse out anywhere. And if you aren't careful, you pick out where the Bible says Judas went out and hung himself. Another verse says you go do likewise. And next thing you know, we'll all be hanging ourselves. You twist the scriptures. You soundbite. But the Bible isn't meant to be sound. He's given a general proverb here, a general principle. That the blessing of the Lord, it makes one rich and it comes without sorrow. You say, what does that mean? I'll tell you a good illustration of it. Study the Kennedy family. That's the best illustration I can tell you about wealth that came with sorrow. They make their wealth in illegal or in the liquor business. They made their wealth in what, for us, as I've said here, you may not agree with me, but I don't see any difference between the man who peddles whiskey and the man who peddles dope, except for the one's legal and the other's not. Man who peddles whiskey and the man who peddles dope both peddle a product that addicts people and deceives people and destroys people. Dope destroys people. You say it destroys a people. I agree with that. But alcohol destroys people. It destroys families. It destroys the happy home. It's designed by the devil to addict people and to control them and to make them dependent and finally to damn them. That's the same thing dope does. But so we have this family that made all of this wealth in there, and you look at the sorrow. I don't know. Aside from the Jewish nation history, where they've had sorrow after sorrow after sorrow, you may look a long time to find a group of people that have had more troubles than that trouble. A lot of times, wealth just leads to sorrow. I think they say that those who win the lottery, as much as anything, it brings sorrow. They don't know how to handle it. Had they grown into wealth? Had they built wealth? Had they earned what they have? And had they grown with what they had, they might have been able to handle it. But the sorrow that's with it. Oh, we could just name one person after another person. We're watching it. If you read, and I read news all the time. I don't, as I told you before, I don't have time to watch ABC, CBS, and NBC and their commentary, their political commentary on the news. But I read the news all the time. And I'm always amazed at the lifestyle of the rich and famous. And for those people to tell us anything, starting with marriage, they've desecrated marriage. They ought not even get married, that crowd. You say, boy, Brother Jeff, what do you mean? I mean, they've desecrated a holy thing, and they're not going to honor the thing. What does it matter? All of the adultery and the paganism, and you look at that, and you talk about the lifestyle of the rich and famous. When you watch people get divorced after 2 or 3 years and get remarried and divorced and remarried and divorced, you're not looking at happy people. When you look at someone who is an alcoholic, you're not looking at a happy person. When you look at somebody who's involved in immorality, you're not looking at a happy person. You're looking at a searching person. So here, he tells us the blessing of the Lord, it makes one rich without the sorrow. I feel like I'm a rich man. I hope you feel like you're a rich person. I think, you know, my hard time, this is a hard time of year for me. Christmas is a very hard time of year for me because I'm trying to think, what do I want? I may get like with Marty and get a camouflage Bible. He's got him a camouflage Bible back here, and I hunt deer off my front porch. I might need something like that, Marty. But honestly, you look at your lives and you realize there's nothing really you've got to have. You eat. I think I couldn't eat any better than I eat right now, could I? And I think I couldn't sleep any better than I sleep right now. No, I think, what don't I have that I've just got to have? I don't know. And so we're rich. We don't have the sorrow with it. But here's the long, the out, let's see what he's the long-term effect. When the Lord blesses, it doesn't have the sorrow with it. Look at verse 24. The fear of the wicked, it'll come upon him. But the desire of the righteous will be granted. That which the wicked fears, sooner or later, yes, he's going to face. There's a verse in the Bible that says, the wicked flee when no man pursue. I don't know if you've ever been around wicked people long. Have you been around anybody wicked that has to stay by the curtain? I mean, that car goes down the road, they open the curtain. Their natural response to a car is to get up and open the door and see who drove by. Now, why would you do that? Always looking behind them, always looking over their shoulder. I don't like to be around those kind of people because they probably have somebody out to shoot them. They probably need shot. And I'd get shot just being with them. The wicked flee when no man pursues. I know of a young man killed himself. Absolutely killed himself because the police came to his door. Went in the bathroom and killed himself and found out. Came out bleeding all over, I'm talking about, and died right there in front of his family. And you know what? The police were at the wrong door. That literally happened. They were at the wrong door. They were looking for somebody else. But the fear of the wicked does come upon them, and the wicked have their fears. You know when the wicked's fears are real? It's when they're alone. It's at night. Well, Charlie Pride used to sing a song. I shouldn't say this. The snakes crawl at night. That's what they say. Y'all ever heard that song? When the sun goes down, the snakes will play. Well, it's something about the night. Wickedness comes out at night. But I tell you, wicked people don't like to be alone at night. They lay in their bed and they toss and turn. Then's when the fears come. Anybody in a crowd in a party can put on a face. But I'll tell you this. When it comes right down to it, you're just a man and you're just a woman. And that other person, they're bold, but they got the fears. Now think about these guys. You know this type. They're on the job, they're loud and boisterous, curse like a sailor man, as they say. If you're a sailor man, I don't mean to say. That's just a saying. But army people are kind of known for that kind of stuff. I mean, military people, not army people, but military. But on the job, there are guys like that. And then they go home, and if you go to their house with them, you think, what happened? We walk through that door, and the conversation changed. They're afraid of their wives. They don't talk that way in front of their wives. They don't talk that way in front of their mamas. Here's a guy, you think, he curses God, curses everything, but he's afraid of his wife. I didn't know he's afraid of. He's afraid in the night. And his fears will come upon him. Sooner or later, it's going to happen to him. But on the other side, the long-term effect of righteousness, the desires that he has, are going to be granted. He describes the wicked. When the whirlwind passes, the wicked is no more. But the righteous has an everlasting foundation. And so, look at the long term. Look at verse 27. The fear of the Lord prolongs days, but the years of the wicked will be shortened. They shall be shortened. And some want to say that this just means the righteous will have better days, and the wicked will have less fullness of days in the sense of enjoyment of days. But I think there's a case easily made that righteousness leads to longer life as a general rule. Righteousness leads to a longer, fuller life. And wickedness leads to a shorter life. The span of life, we talked a little bit about it from another verse last week, but the years of the wicked will be shortened. The Bible says if you honor your parents, your days will be long. That doesn't mean that everybody that's had a long life honored their parents, nor does it mean everybody died a short life, didn't honor their parents, but it's a principle. There are exceptions to the rule, but it's a basic rule that if you do that which is right, one thing is going to be healthier. Sin affects you physically. Sin affects you mentally. I think one of the problems we're seeing in America with all the emotionalism, emotional problems we have as a result of sin, it's catching up with us. People have a hard time living with themselves. And they say, especially girls, you know, boys commit immorality and it doesn't seem to affect them, but it will sooner or later. But girls, they have a hard time with it. It affects them. And sin, emotion, I have no question in my mind that your mental, emotional state affects your health and your life. But then just take the things of the effect certain sins have on you. And we start to think about those type things, aren't we? We may look at alcohol and say, well, that's a definite thing that has a sin upon us and our effect upon our bodies. That's right. The things do. We're looking at the AIDS epidemic, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. And boy, you know, I saw a statistic. You know, they said 40% of all the babies born in America are illegitimate. 40%. Now, that staggers me. Unbelievable that could be true. And you take, I told somebody the other day, there's a 95% cure rate for AIDS right now. And in the second generation, it will be gone completely, but 95% because it's spread, but 95% is behavior. And if we stop that behavior, we'll stop that amount of it. But I mentioned that 40%, don't think it's just a homosexual thing. Because today it's so wicked, the perversion is so such, and what people will do, that it's crossing over. And of course, drugs and all of that stuff. But there's a number of reasons we can look at and say the fear of the Lord prolongeth days. And the years of the wicked will be shortened. It's a simple fact. You look at, I mentioned last week, you can look at the gangsters, for instance. And they live short lives. And it affects the years. But then he talks about the expectation of the hope of the righteous. It'll be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked. It perishes. It's a long-term effect. The way of the Lord is strength. The word strength is fortress. For the upright, destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. Verse 30, the righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inhabit the earth. I know, you look at that and you say, well, they have been removed, but it's a proverb, it's a principle of the truth. And in the end, the righteous will not be removed. The Bible says that we shall inherit the earth, the meek shall inherit the earth. Someone said, they were crying against that meekness thing. Some psychologist was to a counselee. You don't want to inherit the earth, do you? In other words, forget about this meekness. You've got to start thinking about yourself. And you've got to be aggressive. And you've got to go for what you want in life. This meekness won't get you anywhere. And the man said to the lady, he said, you don't want to inherit. The lady told me this personally. She said, they said to me, you don't want to inherit the earth, do you? That was your whole problem, is people running over you and you're so meek and mealy-mouthed. And I thought when I heard that, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Because that's exactly what most of the people in America live for, is the inheritance here. The little doctor himself that was telling her that, the counselor. He's trying to get his piece of the pie. We die for another acre of land or a bigger house or in a bigger, better neighborhood. And what is that but trying to inherit the earth? We put our names on our property. The Bible says we do so because the inward thought is we think we're going to live forever. And a man says, you don't want to inherit the earth. Here's the truth. The truth of it is that the wicked finally are going to be no more. As far as the earth goes, they're not going to inhabit it. But you and I. The promise is forever. The Old Testament. The land is forever. And the Bible teaches us a new heaven and a new earth. Whether you take it as a complete new earth or a refurbished earth, doesn't make a difference to me. But I know this, that we're going to inherit it forever. That's the idea. He's talking about the long-term effect. He comes back to talk about the mouth of the righteous and the lips of the righteous there in verse 31, verse 32, that theme that we've already mentioned. There's one verse I didn't say anything about as we went through, but it's verse 23. To do evil is it's like a sport to a fool to do evil or to do evil. But man, the man of understanding, has wisdom. The wicked, they laugh and enjoy it. It's fun. It's a conquest. Have you ever known a thief? I don't know what the word for a habitual thief is. Have you ever known one? Someone I dearly love. In his earlier years. And he couldn't help it. He was stealing the matches off a counter. You know, you put matches there. There was a time that businesses would put matches. You get your book of matches. You'd have to get him a handful of them. And if he was with him, he'd say, get you a handful of those matches. If it was pins, not only get your hand, or get out, he'd hold them out and show you. That's what I got. I know people that are hooking crooks. They like to hook people. In other words, they like the deal of feeling like they took you. They outwitted you. They smarted you. They'll just steal from you. They didn't walk up to the gun with you, to you, and take what you got, but they outwitted you. And it was a sport to them. Girls are silly. They don't know it's a sport to the boys. to take advantage of girls. It's just sport. And there are wicked women out there that go after married men. It's a sport to them. They got a notch in their gun, so to speak, when they get together. And it's especially a sport to them to get a righteous man. Oh, they love to be able to say they got a Sunday school teacher or they got a deacon, but the prize would be got the preacher. It's a sport to them. It doesn't matter to them that you destroyed somebody's family, you destroyed other people that were at least getting some form of help from that person. It's a sport. It's fun. That's where the wicked are. The sport to do evil, to hook, to crook, to find a way to do it. And they laugh. Boys get together, they laugh. That's just the reality. It's a sport to them. Same old stupid line. Just a sport. Make sport of people. And that's one of the things that makes it so evil. Because it's a game. It's a game. But it's more than that. Because it's never a game when you ruin somebody's life. It's never a game when you leave a scar that'll be there 30 years from now. No, it's not a game. Playing baseball is a game. Playing football is a game, as they say. But not to do evil. Because evil affects people. They are people. But the man of understanding, he has wisdom in this thing. He doesn't enjoy it. He's not going to be a part of it. Oh, here these proverbs. They speak to us about the long-term effect of righteousness and wickedness. Now let's close with just that verse because I wish that every one of us could see the long-term effect of that which we may enjoy this moment. It's a sport to us. But wrong. Wrong never ends. And the wise will have understanding about this. The long-term effect, righteousness and wickedness.